Hello, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. This is the No Skips Podcast with Jack and Lisa. I'm Lisa, of course, hopefully.
Hi, I'm Jack. What's going on?
We're doing this show tonight.
Are you doing okay?
Just kidding. We're not going to encourage any parasocial nonsense.
I don't know if you want to answer. If you're driving for some reason.
You can't hear us. You can hear us. We can't hear you. I don't know where I'm coming on that one.
No, but you know what? If you want to answer out loud, that's fine with me. I've never been opposed to people talking out loud to themselves.
Sometimes you need to.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to.
Podcasts feel good. Really good. Yeah. Like there are certain podcasts.
Yelling at your favorite podcaster. You're so stupid.
I think I got yelled at a lot this last week with the Can't Hardly Wait on 90s Court. That's okay. I probably deserved it, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. That is not that show. This show. This is this show. This show is No Skips Podcast, where we are covering in a very casual way albums that I, Lisa, have never listened to and know I should. And tonight.
And sometimes I haven't heard them too. It's not
is this
like,
one you didn't have exposure with?
Yeah, I say this isn't just a husband makes his wife listen to records like a big know-it-all.
Most of them you chose. What was it? Someone hopped on and was all about DJ Shadows introducing.
Nice.
And I was just like, yep.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out.
To Mr. Shadow, as his father is called.
Monsieur Shadow. We are covering Queen's A Night at the Opera. Tonight.
1975.
10 years before I was born. Gosh, I don't like that that's so close to when I was born. The 70s seems so much close. 10 years, yeah. 75.
Okay, fair enough.
I just don't, those numbers are getting. All right.
Time's
weird. I'm not going to have an existential crisis on the show tonight.
Yeah, but I'm still going to pull out that 1971 is 50 years ago.
Stop it right now.
That's the one. You're like, I'm hip. I'm with it. It's 2021. I'm okay with that. But then you realize the older you get, your personal reference points for old have been frozen in time. And that's the problem.
I have been grappling with that in horrible silence for about a week now. And I haven't said anything about it. But even on the spin bike this morning, I was like, I'm 36. That's okay.
That's okay,
that's
right?
Still pretty young, right? Please tell me I'm young. Okay, look, enough of our crises.
You were in the bath and then you looked at your wrinkled. My hands are so wrinkly.
Get out of the bath, loser. No.
No, my bones are actually quite achy.
I'm so sore from lifting some weights. Queen.
I don't like them. I need to make that perfectly clear up at the top. I do not like Queen.
Wow.
This has some all-time great genius level songs.
Sure. Yes, yes, yes.
All-time great. They could put out some tunes, but if you're talking about a no skips kind of essential artist, I'm going to argue Queen is not it. Queen is not in the canon.
I would get in that boat as well to say this is not this
Queen.
Queen is
like your essential to me, essential greatest hits style,
right?
Recording artist.
Yeah.
Okay. Because when you get the greatest hits, you're together and you're like, how could one band create so many great songs? And it's like, well, they took their time.
They felt around. They kicked some stuff around. And boy, did they kick some stuff around. A Night of the Opera released, what was it, June 21st? November 21st, 1975. This is their fourth studio album. They stole the title at the time for the most expensive record to be recorded.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember why.
Soon to be outdone, I'm sure, by rumors. I think that was the most expensive album at the time.
Was that one just because of the cocaine budget?
Yeah, just crazy cocaine budget.
I want a cocaine budget. No one ever asked me to pencil in. Like,
what's our household cocaine budget these days?
Is that a write-off?
Is this
a write-off? Is that good?
You're very proud of yourself for that one.
I don't know. The album came to be after years of contractual strife.
Oh, that's
strife.
Right. That's right, because then they left their old record label.
Right.
Go
right.
To a new one.
And this is the one. And so, yeah, that their previous, I mean, that'll show up a lot in this album. But yeah, they were pretty much broke when they started this. And I think they got signed on with the agent that was handling like Zeppelin and other people at the time.
Interesting.
Other very big stars. And he was like, look, if you want this, like go and make something big happen. I'm going to turn my up just a little bit. I think I'm a little quiet. There we go. He's like, you better make something big happen. And he did.
Wow.
And they kind of did.
They sure did.
They
People
got
no Queen now. They're still playing.
Queen? Who's the front person now?
Someone from...
Because newsflash, Freddie Mercury's dead.
He is dead, yes.
We know this,
he was,
right?
He was a... I can't remember the name. I'm pretty sure he was on Idol.
Is it just
no,
Rami
no, no.
Malek?
It was like an American Idol. It was just whoever the campiest, vampiest dude on American Idol, like he became the nude lead singer.
Do you remember when they had the crooner? The redheaded crooner? On American
We're
Idol?
Not talking about American Idol. Ever. Ever.
No, I want
not
the...
now, not ever. I'm sorry I brought it up. We're gonna start the episode over again. If there is a point at which this show exists, at the very other end of the spectrum is talking about American Idol. We're not doing that to ourselves.
I think our listeners want it a little bit, but okay. You're probably right. It's not Rami Malek and it's not the redheaded crooner from American Idol season. One or two. Correct. Okay. Queen's still doing something, apparently. Good for them. They were, like I said, super broke. I think I read they were getting £60 a week for their contract.
Mate, you're only getting £60. 60 quid.
Yeah, not going great for them. So they were super, super fucking broke. And
in today's money, that's roughly $7 million a week. So I don't, I'm joking, but.
Yeah, the I watched a behind the music, sort of, because children wouldn't allow all of it. But I watched some of the behind the music for Queen today. It was super fascinating to learn the story behind Freddie Mercury. But what I did not know about this album was that there were hands in the pot all over. Everybody was doing something on this. I did not know. I thought this was a traditional band setup where it was just like, yep, Freddie Mercury, not his real name. Is doing
great stage name though.
It's
that's
a
top tier,
yeah.
Top tier stage.
Take that,
name.
Ziggy Stardust.
Oh,
sucks. Sucks so bad. Freddie Mercury, number one.
A number one.
What was I saying?
I don't know. Let's get back to insulting David Bowie. Is that where you are doing?
We have a part B. We can have it. We have an EP.
A part B.
A two-parter where I'm just like, David Bowie is not as great as everyone thinks he is. That's not true. He is great. He is not. Okay.
Walk it out.
Side note. Music is open to interpretation and not everything suits everyone. So I'm going to say things, and I have said things about albums that either you love or I love and you don't agree with. And guess what? That's okay. You ever heard this phrase, agree to disagree? It's a magical thing to take into consideration.
We're having a laugh, mate. We're having a laugh.
This is seriously just a fun show. And my my opinions suck most of the time, and I am 100% aware of that.
Well,
so.
But it's also, again, this is us doing the show in our time of life. We started during a pandemic. Mm. We have three small children. Not to always make a culpa about having kids, but it alters your ability to listen to music. And it's fascinating to me because it does change. Like, I attempted to listen to some of this album on our excellent 5.1 surround sound system.
Right.
However, with a three-year-old also playing a harmonica tunelessly as a counterpoint.
I don't know. I think it would have gone in seamlessly with the album.
In portions.
Track two, perfect fit.
It's just...
Perfect fit.
Yeah. It was strange. But I kept thinking about that. I kept turning that over in terms of, like... Some art, and some of my favorite art, in fact, demands more attention. Mm-hmm. More like, no, put your phone away. Like, correct. Pay attention to this. And where we're at in our lives, hell, we could just do that same. You could do the same run of albums. We're not going to do that. But you could do the same run of albums in 10 years, right? And it would hit probably a lot differently.
I wonder what it's going to sound like when I'm 46 to listen to The Downward Spiral.
You're like,
yeah, yeah. This is great.
Thank you. Thank
been
you, Mr.
There.
Reznor.
I've gone down and come back up. Ooh, okay, let's get back to A Night at the Opera. So Queen's fourth album, like we said, Fred. I mean, I don't know. I genuinely only knew We Will Rock You, and of course Bohemian Rhapsody, which is on this album.
Right.
Did not know anything else about what they were doing. Just assumed everything they did was like We Will Rock You. That is not true.
Exactly.
That's super not true.
Yeah.
This album is 100% not that song.
And it's fun too because again, like a lot of groups at the time, gosh, even you talk about Pink Floyd went through very different kinds of places and sounds and recording structures. And I think that's it's interesting to reflect on that, that I think you don't get maybe those colossal tracks without the willingness to, you know, just try a little bit of everything. They right. don't make for particularly coherent albums, or not coherent the way that I want them to be coherent.
Mm-hmm. Well, not everything can be Dark Side of the Moon, understandable.
Right. But yeah. But yeah. I mean, they even get into the tape loops on this one, which I was not expecting. So we'll get to that.
We will get to that. Let's just go ahead and get into the album because sure. there, this one was fun because it is presented as side one, side two, right? Mm-hmm. It's cool to kind of look at how this mm-hmm. would. I looking at it from an album like a vinyl perspective, how they close out side one is like I would just walk away. But we'll come back to that.
Where was side one end?
Side one ends at Seaside Rendezvous.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, because I knew we haven't talked about this album at all, and I knew this was triggering the same Beatles.
Yes,
like,
yeah. Oh, yep. Yep.
People yep. have canes and pork pie hats, and they're shut, and they literally recorded through a megaphone.
I know. Yeah, I know.
Believe me, I can't take it either.
Okay,
I really can't.
That's good to hear. But Death on Two Legs is the opening track, okay?
Yeah, we'll get to
which
that.
Is,
we'll get
which
to
is... That. Pretty awesome, actually. It's a fiery, angry ode to their previous manager, whose name is Norman Sheffield, for completely fucking them over with their contract, as I alluded to earlier in the episode. Absolutely worked them and took all of their money and abused the situation. Yeah. And they were left having, I mean, they got screwed so hard trying to get out of that contract with them. So the teardowns include things like, you've taken all my money and you want more, misguided old mule with your pig-headed rules. You never had a heart of your own, killjoy, bad guy, big talking small fry. You're just an old barrow boy.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Take that, Norman Sheffield. whose name I have to keep reading because I don't remember it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a... maybe this is just a very American feeling for me, but it's just there's something about class. There's something about Queen being a bunch of guys that are pretty posh for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a poshness that kind of makes this album... like, that to me is the double-edged sword of Queen. Is that, like, their highbrow kind of tendencies inform some of their very best work. Again, you don't have Bohemian Rhapsody without, like... reaching for it,
right? Both,
you know, in many ways, really, really reaching for it. But then, so many of the other songs, you're just like this is a diss track. It's just like
it's kind of dope as a diss track, though. It gave me my new favorite cut down. You're a sewer rat decaying in a cesspool of pride. That's my like the next time you piss me off, I'm gonna toss that one
incredible.
At you. I'm gonna lob
incredible.
It across the kitchen.
Incredible,
you sir, are a sewer rat decaying in a cesspool of pride. Do the dishes.
I just see it comes off as very toothless to me. It comes as this
like
these
it.
Gormless upper class twits. Like it just doesn't do anything for me. Not to say that like it isn't justified from their prior circumstance, but like hitting the ground running with this one, I don't feel endeared as a listener.
Well, knowing this album and Bohemian Rhapsody and We Will Rock You, knowing what they went through. And that they chose sure. this to be the opening track was
yeah.
just like
there's some fieriness
like,
yeah there's some spirit.
Like, by the way, track one.
Yeah.
By the
hey,
way,
hey, what's up? Hey, we're back.
Yeah, and I think the last line in this track is "I feel good,"
yeah.
which is a really fun, yeah. really fun closer to it.
It is.
And then we go to track two, "Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon." Tell me you didn't, as much as you probably dislike this track, did you not identify with it so hard?
Yeah,
lazing
no,
on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, of course. No, yeah, exactly. Well, we had this argument because I took a nap on Sunday and you went on a sweaty bike ride. Mm-hmm. That's what we did on our Sunday afternoon. So, yes, obviously, I prefer to sleep. I'm going to sleep through this track, too, though.
Okay.
Bam.
Of course.
Oh, we're going to do another Sunday song. I was like, stop it.
No, you stop it.
They were like hipsters 40 years prior of like if there would be the guy at the party with a ukulele or a little banjo and be like, this is cool. And you're like, no, it isn't.
The guy with a didgeridoo, unironically.
Those are probably cool. I've never seen one.
Are they cool again yet?
I think if you showed up with a didg, I'd be like, awesome.
I'm going to marry her again. Can I have a didgeridoo for Christmas?
No,
damn
it's probably
it.
Expensive.
Well, all right. Yeah, this is the first of several Beatles-esque tracks, which is, yeah, if you have not yet listened to Beatles, we covered Abbey Road,
Beatles,
right?
The Beatles don't own being insanely corny.
No, of course not. But I'm saying that when it comes to liking the Beatles, their fondness for campy tracks is what keeps me from being like, I like the Beatles. Do I know and appreciate them? Absolutely, I do. Do I like them? I do not like the Beatles. Sure. I like some of what they're doing, but this incredible speed bump they put there called campy music has prevented me from being like, I'm a Beatles fan. Right. And as a result, I felt the same way because it wasn't just like one track. It was like three or four tracks on this album.
There was something there in the water that someone's like, hey, do you want to pretend like it's the 30s? And they're like, absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Let's get on. And it's like, no,
What I was surprised about with this album was that with all of the campiness and kind of listening to it through and through, I was just like, okay, I'm going to come back and revisit this. And the lyrics are going to show me that this, again, was a concept album. This was not a concept album.
Right.
This was just stuff.
It was just stuff.
It
exactly.
was just stuff. Just
a night, a Night at the Opera is a warning as a title.
I thought with the title like A Night at the Opera that it was going to be indicative of like.
Oh yeah, no.
I kept reaching at that for straws.
I mean,
I kid
because of course if they took that kind of approach, like compositional approach, that yielded Bohemian Rhapsody in more of the album, I think I could have been down with it.
Right.
Right. Right. Like that it's always kind of that high energy. It's like, don't give me the pork pie hat and the megaphone.
Right. What was that? I read that they said Freddie sang the vocals in the studio and then reproduced it through headphones in a tin bucket somewhere else in the studio.
Oh, boy.
So that's how they achieved that kind of like
tinny effect.
Yeah. Which is cool.
I mean, hey.
It's cool.
We all have fun. We all have our fun. Some of them don't release our fun as major label recordings.
Well, what about this? I'm in love with my car.
Easily. See, that to me, I don't like camp. I don't like the distancing effect of like winky wink, wink wink, winky winky wink wink wink. So even the, and here's the thing. You watch a little bit of that behind the scenes music. These guys are dorks. Like, 100%. The reason why the band failed Smile, you know, prior to Freddie Mercury is because they're hopeless dorks and no one wanted to, they were like, yeah, come down off the stage. We'll give you a wedgie. Like that's the, all the vibes that the rest of Queen
gives
off.
I don't know. I haven't seen enough of any.
Sorry, I interrupted. Go on.
No, I haven't seen enough of it. I mean, Freddie Mercury came off as like this really inventive powerhouse and the rest of them, I just don't know anything about. And so I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Yeah, without going to like inside baseball, just watch any of the stuff that was about the hagiography that's clearly intended with the Queen biopic, the movie, right? Because they were like, they're annoyed that it's still, as then, as now, still the Freddie show and he's been dead. And they're still pissed that they're like, hey, don't forget our legacy. Emphasis on our, like, right. I'm Brian May. It's like, yeah, Brian May, you have a sweet guitar tone. I know because it's exactly the same guitar tone on every single Queen song. That's Brian May. Mays. That's Brian Mays. Here it is. Like, you know, okay, cool. It's a great guitar tone.
Man, this is the first one that you're going to get shit on instead of me.
It's cool. I'll fight them. I'll give them all wedgies because Queen's fans also... Dorks.
My dad's a Queen fan, I think, if you want to give...
Hey,
that'd be
again,
really tough to give that 6'3" tall man a wedgie.
Again, the Queen greatest hits, few bands can step to
That's fair. I would give
that is wall-to-wall gold, whereas a lot of even their greatest hits, you get like four songs in and you're like, you're treading water, buddy.
Right.
Whereas Queen, like legit, those are incredible songs. This is not an incredible album. This is a song, this is like... Two, three really good songs. One extraordinary. And one very good. And then a song that I appreciate, which is I Love My Car. To bring it all
I'm
back
around.
I'm in love with my car. Which they took as a joke. They're like, this is you're taking the piss, mate. Eh?
Well, I mean, it's only a joke unless you don't laugh, right? It's like,
but it's
like,
not. No, this is what I'm talking about, though. This was not written by Freddie Mercury.
No, it wasn't. It was written by the drummer.
Right.
Whose name?
And he's like,
Roger Taylor.
Yeah, he's like, I'm in love with my car. And it's so, and so, like I say, I don't like the distancing effect that irony and camp bring to music. And so even though this song is funny, I like it a lot better than a lot of what's going on the album, because he's dead serious.
He is, which is awesome. Which is shocking and sad and funny and then a little annoying and then fascinating, because
right.
I was like,
you take the measure of it. Yeah.
I was like, I don't get car people. You're always talking about your damn car. I can't imagine car people. And then for a moment there, I looked in the mirror and I said, you talk about your espresso machine the way that people talk about their cars.
Yeah,
you sure. are a car person, but for a different machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody cares.
Yeah.
About your weight distribution tool, how many bars of pressure you can achieve.
Yeah.
The new steam wand tip. No one gives a fuck.
And you need that's your homework is your the rewrite of I Love My Car too.
I'm in love with my
espresso machine.
Synchronica.
Yeah. Anyone?
He had an Alfa Romeo, which is pretty dope.
That's cool.
And the revving of the engine in the song was actually his car at the time.
Nice.
Which is a cool little
It's funny to me how much of a gulf between the like Beach Boys talking about their Deuce Coupe kind of, you know, songs of the 60s and the distance to 1975, and it's like it couldn't be further in terms of like culturally. Like what are you doing,
buddy? What's happening?
Hey.
The one bullet point I wrote for this that I know I have to read out loud is Roger Taylor, the song is weird and you should feel weird. You're my best friend. Track, what are we on, four? Track four. You're my best friend.
The edges are worn out on it because I can't count the number of like movie, especially montages of like a relationship that have used this song to death. Mm-hmm. However, especially that Rhodes sound in the beginning that intros it all out, it's a tight recording. It's a lovely sentiment, beautifully expressed. And it came from a real place. I think the bassist wrote this one. He's mm-hmm. just gotten married.
Correct. John Deacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've been married 46 years.
Yay!
Congratulations to you guys.
Still the best friend. And I certainly... There.
Hey, well, cheers to our mint juleps and Moscow Mule mugs looking like pineapples under the sea.
It's fine.
You're My Best Friend is a track that I have heard a million times in my life.
Yes.
Did not know it was a Queen song.
That's funny.
And so when I heard it, I was just like, this is Queen.
Oh, shit.
So I know. So that was a new one I learned.
There you
go. I learned something new. It's a very sweet and simple song.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's nothing much to it. But like, ooh, you make me live. I'm happy at home. You're my best friend. That's sweet. That's sweet.
It's sweet. The universality of that is deceptive. It's really hard to write that kind of universal of a song mm-hmm. and land it that well. And that's why it gets played to death in montages.
True. It's a very good one.
It's excellent.
Yeah.
It's still a great song.
Yeah. It's nice. And then we get 39. Well, let's just go ahead and pull out the stops. Which is the Tree Fingers for you? Tree Fingers, of course, if you're new to the show.
Oh, my gosh.
No, hold on. Wait. Okay. Tree Fingers, if you're new to the show. Tree Fingers is a track by Radiohead on Kid A. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Which
is essential, by the way. I'm not trying to make it like Tree Fingers is the song you should skip. It's that people think Tree Fingers should be skipped.
Okay. But
and
it's also...
And maybe some people, Errol Packard, think that it should be skipped.
You don't have to drop last names. You don't have to drop last names.
Schmerl Schmackard.
Go ahead.
Tree Fingers is a good track. It's just that we take it to mean the song that you have the impulse to skip the most
for
on
me.
An
it's
album.
To me, it means The Weakest Link. Ooh, another early 2000s show reference on Fox. What's up?
The Weakest Link.
I'm gonna keep dropping them all night long.
That's all I got. Actually,
39. It's an odd track. About some travelers.
You didn't answer the question.
Was the question? I was going to ask you what was the Tree Fingers for this album. Did you tell me?
No, because you interrupted me again.
Great. My question was for you. What is the Tree Fingers?
Song of the Prophet, 100,000,000%.
Yes. I will land with you on that one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, it's
this song sucks real bad.
We'll get to it. 39 is a track about some travelers who head off on some kind of voyage. mm-hmm. like a year-long voyage, only to return and see that hundreds of years have passed. Okay.
Space travel.
Yeah. 75. Cool.
Mid-70s, big on space imagery and
it's just
space
a weird,
times.
It's a weird up-tempo acoustic track. What's happening on this album? I genuinely thought this was a concept album. And then no. I went back and said, there's nothing conceptual
happening. Brian Mays wanted to write a song about space travel. And you get a taste of what Queen without Freddie Mercury would have sounded like.
Just oh, that's right. This is the one. Is this the one that he was not involved in, or was it a different one?
I think so. I don't know.
I thought I wrote it down. Whatever the case is.
Right.
I would be so pissed if I were Freddie Mercury to be like, I am a fucking genius. I am so good at this. I am so good at what I do.
Right.
And you want to make a song about your car and time traveling, and I've got Bohemian Rhapsody brewing in the background,
right,
making the best cup of tea you ever had. And
it
you
was
want-
a joint effort, though. I understand that they, I think they rightfully bristle against that sentiment because it's not just Freddie Mercury. The Mays' guitar tone, the way the band plays. In fact, Mays' voice is remarkable.
But it was his idea, to my understanding, was it not? They call literally
what,
in
Bohemian
my notes.
Rhapsody? Bohemian Rhapsody. Oh yeah, no, Rhapsody. Oh for sure, yeah, it was written by Mercury for sure.
It was called Freddie's Thing.
I'm just saying, bands are a group effort.
This is true. However, when the lead singer who's oftentimes the brains of the operation, or
oftentimes
is not involved, you get shit like 39.
Oh yeah, no, I can agree
so
with that.
So if you were looking at this and you go, Freddie Mercury was involved in Bohemian Rhapsody, this was largely his baby, and you look, Freddie Mercury was not involved in 39.
Freddie Mercury didn't write "You're My Best Friend" either.
Correct, but he sang it and made it very nice.
That's true.
So
I'm glad anyway. We're big 39 boosters here.
Big
on this 39, show.
39, I'm feeling fine. Hey, you're 39.
Yeah.
Are you feeling fine?
I could go on 100-year space travel.
Sounds pretty good right now, doesn't it?
Sounds
come
right.
Back to just one burnt-ass piece of toast is the earth. All right, let's not talk about 39 anymore. Sweet Lady.
Sweet Lady! A little Tim and Eric for you.
Oh. Another time signature note. We have some 3/4 time that drops into 4/4.
Wow.
Shut the fuck up. Did you hear what was it? 20 was it?
Is this the 7/8 time? Is this the 9/10? Holy shit! 5/4.
I hate you so much. Go to hell, Jack. 3/4 is awesome.
It is awesome. It is.
Oh, you're such a bitch sometimes.
It's an easy way to roast you, is all.
It is really easy to roast me. Son of a bitch. Great vocals from Mercury on Sweet Lady. It's an odd track about a couple fighting. I'll fight you. Oh, here we
see,
go. Coming
see?
Full circle.
There you go.
All because I had to point out the musically interesting time signature.
She's touching the bridge of her nose like she's putting up her nerd glasses.
It's just the weird lump in my nose right there. I'm just trying to push it into my brain so I can give myself a brain injury and never record another podcast.
Dang.
Got a little dark there. Thanks, Nine Inch Nails. So... Also, you call me sweet like I'm some kind of cheese.
Yeah.
There's a line on this track.
Hmm.
What kind of cheese have you ever smelled that was sweet? None.
Maybe that's a British
Do
thing.
They have sweet cheese in Britain?
Excuse me.
You got sweet cheese in it. Is that good?
Wait, that was you? You're not throwing your... You were throwing your voice? You didn't hit the soundboard and then play a perfect British accent. Incredible. Incredible.
Sweet cheese for the kids. Oh, man. Sweet Lady. It ends. It's a fun little frenzy. Couple fighting, not trusting each other that one of them is alone. Yeah, I don't know. The whole first part of the album is just kind of confusing and all over the place.
A little over the place.
But it doesn't get better. But wait, there's more. We end on Seaside Rendezvous, a super severe vaudeville track.
Yeah, once again, we're back in the old-timey times with this shtick, and you're like, you got to hang it up.
No.
Who?
Don't worry, they pull one more out before this is over.
I know.
You know.
But it's crazy to me because it's like, You can always tell the duds when you look up the, like, especially for a popular band, and they're like, this song was never performed live, right? Because you're just like, you knew it was dead air, and you knew it was kind of wanky for you to include the song. But
right.
It's just, hey, we're recording an album. I want to get mine in there, too.
This song, Seaside Rendezvous, features one of my least favorite musical options, features ever, which is people using their voices to pretend to be instruments. And that's a no from me.
Yeah,
that's a big no.
That's
a yikes.
That's a big no. Is there vocal scatting? I can't remember.
Not scatting per se, but there's them pretending to be instruments.
Which is really bad.
Trumpets or tubas or something. And it's just a big barbershop quartet feel on this track. And I'm just like, is this over yet? And it is. Yeah, and that's the end of side one. And I'm telling you right now, if I had no experience with Queen, know what was coming, I would have shut the record player.
Yeah. Take that record.
Walked away.
Whoop,
yeet.
Yeah, straight through the window. I bet vinyls are pretty great for throwing.
Do you want to do a vinyl frisbee toss?
I don't think so.
I don't want to do that to vinyl.
Yeah, because I don't disrespect the music.
That's fair. What if we got just an album that was just side one of this album? If you can look past the music situation that's happening here, it is a cute little ditty about like being in like a fanciful little day of being in love or something. It's cute.
I like your caveat of for a song, if you can look past the music. Very generous.
Movie. If you could just look past the visuals.
Yeah.
The concept.
You're really enjoying it. Yeah.
What was it? Into the Void? Is that the movie?
Enter the Void.
Enter the Void.
Yeah, I guess. Gaspar, no.
Just
no
the way. Intro. If you can get past the intro. I don't even know. I've never gotten past the intro, so I don't know.
Oh, I mean, yeah, no. It's not a very good movie. I'd love to watch the intro, though.
I don't know if I can do it.
Dun, 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 dun,
all right, that's
dun.
Enough. Side two. Flip this shit over. The Prophet song.
Here we go. Starting strong. You're like...
Ending strong. Starting stronger yet somehow. The Prophet song. Originally titled People of the Earth, which is one of the kind of main lyrical lines there. The idea for this apparently originated from a fever dream that Mays had while he was dealing with, I believe, hepatitis? I think it is May, not
Drugatitis. He was tripping balls. I just love people say things like, oh, I had a fever dream. And you're like, it was the 70s. You don't have to use code. All right.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. This is 8 minutes of agony.
Yeah, super painful.
There's vocal and musical talent abounding here. The harmonies, it's great. However, it becomes a panic attack before you know it, and then you're just like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this is happening to me right now. I need this song to be over. And it's like, no, there's 8 minutes.
I'll listen to all 12 or 16 or however many minutes of Sister Ray from Velvet Underground, which is like red line nails on a chalkboard playing. I'll listen to the end of Wilco's A Ghost Is Born, which just ends up in just noise, right? I'll even listen to a Mertzbau song, quote, air quote.
Look at him dropping all this shit.
I'll drop all that shit. But for these guys playing Steve Reich with tape loops with Freddie Mercury's voice in the studio, put a cork in it.
Wow. I've not heard you be so against an album yet. But the Prophet's song is out there. I could feel my soul leaving my body.
Yeah,
during the acapella stuff.
Right.
Not the, because it again, wasn't yeah, good, tape, but because yeah, it was like stuff. it was just killing me. It was pretty, but it was killing me.
No. That's a feeling of a parent in the back of the classroom forced through a recital of some kind.
Oh,
you're
like,
okay, I'm only here because I love you. If this were on the merits of what's getting into my ears, I'm leaving.
Kids, if you're listening to this in the future, we love you, and all of your recitals were amazing.
Exactly.
We were there for it in heart,
100%.
Body, mind, and soul.
No, I'm just talking about my own dad. who always dipped out like in the middle of every play I was in, and I was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You marry me.
Not for your acting abilities.
Wow. It all comes down. It all comes right out.
Love of my life.
Song. Song of the prophet.
Love of my life. This is a sweet song and an ode to Freddie's former partner, Mary Austin. He was with Mary for years and years and years and years. Even though he'd had relationships with both males and females.
Right.
I think during and maybe even at, well, I don't know about during, but after as well. She was the love of his life. And so this was kind of his, like, I love you. You are the love. I mean, yeah, again, it's pretty simple. There wasn't a whole lot of crazy depth here, but they were apparently best friends up until the end for him, which is tremendously sweet. Sometimes exes end up being like meaningful sometimes to the end like that. That was a very fascinating situation, but the bridge toward the end killed me on this one. You will remember when this is blown over and everything's all by the way. When I grow older, I will be there at your side to remind you how I still love you.
Oof.
Oof.
That's tough.
Freddie Mercury. What a force to be reckoned with, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything for love of my life other than tell me that I'm the love of your life?
Obs. Totes. That's totes, what obs. I was going to say. Obs.
Mm, yeah.
Other than that, it's just it's funny sort of structurally that so many of the songs on this album are kind of like doubles, right? It's like, here comes the vaudeville shit, here comes the, like,
the love song.
Yeah, the love song, which are twinned, you know, here, love of my life and best friend, you know.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Good Company, another campy track. One more for the road, but this time with the ukulele banjo.
There it is. That was the one I was thinking of when I was leveling the hipster comment.
This is the one, like, I have it written down. This is the one that does not have Mercury's involvement at all.
Ah.
They're like, you know what? Not just right. a ukulele, banjo. What even is that?
I don't know. This is why these guys would have been, yeah, like atomic wedgied in college if it weren't for...
They were in college for crazy cool shit. All the while being
sure,
like...
Sure, yeah. Go do that.
But then Bohemian Rhapsody wouldn't exist.
Well, I'm just talking about the non-Freddie Mercury portion of Queens.
Okay.
So like Queen.
But they were all doing cool shit, but yeah, whatever the case is.
I'm saying the sum's greater than the parts.
Because
maybe even the push and pull, you never know sometimes. Maybe even the combination of that, right? Maybe Freddie Mercury. Because sometimes people get let off the hook and go to do whatever their dream project is, and it's just a nightmare. Because the constraints of the group dynamic, trying as they might be, is what made that magic happen. So
okay,
y'all don't know.
There is, okay, hold on, this is technically considered Dixieland jazz, which is a genre I hope to never experience again.
Yeah,
but there is, I will say, as a saving grace for this track, there's a really nice flourish toward the end, maybe two-thirds of the way through the track, that I was just like, that's redeeming.
Okay. Okay.
But the rest of it, no thank you. But that's okay, because guess what? Finally.
We made it
to the second to last track.
Yeah, basically the last song.
Bohemian Rhapsody. The meat and potatoes, not only of this album, but of basically the entire decade.
The one thing I will say is neat.
Whoa.
That could be wrong. But I felt like Good Company had a little bit of a piano line that echoes, or sort of a presentiment.
Yeah.
Which was nice. That was one thing. For as much as I'm ready to just completely disregard this as an album, you know, sort of art form, listening experience. I'm never going to come back to this album, I don't think.
No, probably not.
But it was neat to hear that, because it's like setting that up, because on radio, Bohemian Rhapsody is so stark because of that. The way it starts in. And so the fact that this album actually does lay the groundwork actually kind of nicely.
Yeah.
You know?
It does. It kind of drops piecemeal about
yeah,
this is a bit of what is going to happen later. There's a little bit of this later.
Yeah.
Because Bohemian Rhapsody is all encompassing of everything that they did. Maybe not so much of the Dixieland jazz.
Right. Thankfully, no megaphones.
But you've got an operatic situation. You've got the heavy rock. You've got Man.
The acapella. The complex vocal melodies in a non-irritating way. You have the camp. You have the high tone of the whole thing, the sort of arch quality to it.
Yeah. So as I said earlier, during recording, this track was known as Fred's Thing until it got its name at the end, towards the end. It is an absolute roller coaster.
Yeah.
It absolutely is from the amazing like harmonizing intro and then the soft verses, and then gets heavier with the mama and that was cool, and then that was really good. It's like Freddie was back. in it just which leads into May's incredible guitar solo, and as soon as that's done, boom, we've got the operatic section, which is just mind-blowing. I think, like what you were saying, I wrote down, I think that the rest of what was going on in the album leads little breadcrumbs of what's to come for here. All the little pieces kind of build up this final explosion of perfection that is Bohemian Rhapsody. It's wild that this was a song that was played on the radio. It is very long.
Mm-hmm.
It is crazy. It's completely crazy because it in and of itself is like, I've only known Bohemian Rhapsody. I've loved Bohemian Rhapsody since I was in like middle school.
Right.
It's like, because this song on a kind is of rad. Like
Wayne's World, for our generation, Bohemian Rhapsody came back suddenly, you know, 20 years later.
Well, for you,
there was always appreciation for Queen. Queen never went away. But mid 90s, its inclusion into Wayne's World is what suddenly brought it back.
Right.
Just much as a man on a skateboard with cranberry juice is bringing back
Fleetwood Mac
for a new generation. They never really left. It's just a something to kind of help crystallize that feeling. And these metalheads headbanging in a car to Bohemian Rhapsody is like, oh my gosh, this song is the greatest. And it is.
It is the greatest. It is the greatest. Because, again, with no experience with Queen really outside of Bohemian Rhapsody, We Will Rock You.
You're my best friend, yeah.
Well, but I didn't really know that song. I just knew it from like car commercials.
Sure.
Which is to say, I did not know it. So with the only experience there is like Bohemian Rhapsody was just like, oh my gosh, these guys are absolute geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then to come to this album and be like, okay, what?
Right. Maybe they weren't firing on all cylinders most of the time.
Correct. But it was interesting to kind of see this perfect recipe come together.
Yep.
And make this absolutely insane masterpiece of a song that cannot be rivaled. It is just, there's nothing like it. There will never be anything like it.
Yeah.
It is just what it is.
Right. Because there are elements of it, again, like you say, all these breadcrumbs, all these elements that are present on the album that I do not like. And then combined in this way, the camp, the high tone, all these things, the sort of the arch sentiment, the sort of the pomp of it, and it's a perfect mix.
I could never imagine I'd hear radio play of songs of men singing this operatic way.
Sure,
but this song's so fucking good.
Yeah,
it's so good. Damn it.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You cannot deny how completely unreal this track is from start to finish. Yeah. Even if you don't like a lot of what Queen is doing, which we did not, according to this episode, there's no way to deny Bohemian Rhapsody. No way.
Yeah.
No way. And then,
well, and if anything, it brings a little bit more appreciation for the song as being so singular when much of the rest of the album is like baffling by comparison.
Right.
I'm in love with excuse me? You're in love with your car?
Is that a joke?
What's that? Who said that?
Who? Cares. The track Bohemian Rhapsody is more or less why we covered this album, I suppose. Although assuming not knowing what else.
Well,
when I don't know
an album, we do at least do a little bit of homework and try and figure out what's generally regarded as their best album.
Yes, this list was
not.
I do
a little lurking around, and so this one was what came up.
Yeah,
and
it took us hours to put together this list of the 52 albums we're going to cover on the show, so
which we're getting up to.
This was 26, so we're at the halfway part.
Halfway point. My goodness.
I think we've deleted some albums. We may have to make ups. No, but we added like Deftones and stuff like that.
Sure,
so we're in good shape.
I think we'll be all right.
Bohemian Rhapsody, and you cannot deny this track. This is an amazing track. if you do not like the track, you're wrong. And and that's okay, because I say opinions are just opinions, but that would be a wrong opinion. It's just an incredible track. I do not know. I don't know. There's no one. I don't think there's ever been anyone doing what they did. Unless I'm totally missing an entire band. I don't think there's ever been.
It's hard. I don't know. I don't think so.
Where does that spark come from, Freddie? Like, where does this?
Who knows?
Where does this composition come from?
There's a playfulness. There is an erudition. There is a lot that I think people have tried in various guises, and it just doesn't. The mix rate isn't right. Again, the camp aspect of Queen really kind of pushes me away a lot of the times, but here it perfectly suits it, right? Go figure.
100%.
It's alchemy. We don't know how that works. Go figure.
Were there a lot of drugs? Did Freddie do a lot of drugs?
I don't know.
Did Freddie do any drugs?
I don't know.
I didn't see it mentioned anywhere, but I could be wrong.
I mean, you're talking about like parts per million in the atmosphere in the 70s.
It was just kind of out there.
Coke on you, so.
Yeah. You go have a little line of Coke with your burger.
No, I'm just saying you walk down the street and someone coughs and then it's cocaine dust is your, you know.
I like it. It sounds fun.
It sounds all right.
It sounds fun.
Sounds high energy.
New York life.
I'm making a new album. I'm recording a new album.
For some reason, they close out the album with God Save the Queen.
And they are a very British band.
They are. This was apparently May's version of Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner. He played
right.
It. Yeah.
It's there. Critics rave. It happened.
It was on there for sure. It was the ending track. You should have just stopped at Bohemian Rhapsody and just been like, you just walk away. It's cool. I mean, it's a short little track. It's no harm, no foul, really.
Sometimes I'm okay with that because there can be the cool down sometimes is really nice after a big finish. Like, again, the Beatles, Her Majesty's a Pretty Nice Girl, right?
Who?
The Beatles. Her Majesty's Beatles. A Pretty Nice Girl.
Right.
The same kind of thing.
What was the track that preceded that?
The End. In the End. That whole medley. It's that whole long medley for Abbey Road.
That's right.
So it's like in the same kind of logic, I'm okay with, because when the little, that's a favorite art form for me. The tidbit, fragment song. Of it's way too short to really be considered a full song. But if the melody, this isn't it. This is not a good fragment song. But ending the album on a fragment is sometimes my favorite. Because especially if it's a song that if further developed would have been a really good song, but they just didn't do it. And it's just like the way that McCartney with Her Majesty is like, I can hear the rest of the song as he would sing it.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. He didn't. He just gives you this little fragment, and then it just sort of hangs.
I'm into that.
Yeah. That is not this, or this is not that.
Yeah.
But that's good show anyway.
That's
good show.
A Night at the Opera.
Good show. 6 out of 10.
I'd give it 7.5 because of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. No, again, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
You jettison the junk bits over a career as a band, their recording career, Queen's corpus is incredible. Their greatest hits sits well above many of their contemporaries easily, but that is also collected as greatest hits. So
true. Do you have a takeaway?
Wanky. I would say wanky. It's a pretty wanky album. You shouldn't have.
But you did.
You did. Sometimes there is sometimes self-indulgence is the right call because it gave us Bohemian Rhapsody.
It did. But boy, was there just a lot of stuff in between.
Right. And what's your takeaway?
Jonk.
Jonk
is not right because you cannot give that definition to an album that gave you Bohemian Rhapsody. I would just say confusing. Because
scattered, right?
Scattered would probably be right because again, it's like you're watching them meander until they get to the final, the crest, right?
Right.
They're like, this is it.
Right.
In the meantime, Freddie's like, fuck this track about my car and your car. And
well, it's one of those things where sometimes creatively you'll get to near the end and like, for example, in movies, a badly written movie, you can usually chop the first 10 or 15 minutes off,
yeah,
and then it's immediately a better movie because there's this sort of wind up action.
Correct.
And it's interesting that, like, sometimes in this, I'm not like going back in time and being like, you should have taken like two more years in the studio, because they probably couldn't, right? Mm-hmm. They probably couldn't afford to. But sometimes you only find what you're really there for, or what you like, something really special there at the end. And then you can be like, oh, let's throw out all this other stuff. Let's actually make A Night at the Opera, not a night at the random vaudeville recordings I make you listen to.
True.
Which is more of what the album came off as.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my thought.
Would you like to look at the spreadsheet to pick out the next album?
Because
I randomly picked out Queen.
You did.
We've got quite an array of artists. If it's red, we've done it.
Sure. Scroll up again.
Sure. I'm glad we're doing this live on the show. This is so good.
Super good. Super good air. Let's do Chemical Brothers, Exit
okay,
Planet Dust.
That's what I was thinking. All right. Chemical Brothers next week, Exit Planet
their
Dust.
Seminal first album, oh, Exit snap. Planet Dust.
That'll be wild.
What a time.
I don't know much about Chemical Brothers. Except for they did the Hey Boy.
Yeah, they're part of the what was known as the Big Beat. Like when everyone got real horned up about like electronic music in the mm-hmm. late 90s, they were a huge part of that sort of swing up. But have remained, like, that's the neat thing about electronic artists as opposed to rock artists, where it's like, you guys are just old and tired, and this sucks now. But like, electronic art acts can keep going pretty damn well. Some 90s electronic acts have released stuff 20 years later, and you're like, damn, you, what, who lets you still make good music? What's going on?
They did. Chemical Brothers.
Exit Planet Dust.
All right.
Next week.
We have our marching orders. So that was Queen's A Night at the Opera. Thank you guys so much for listening. And by the way, if you would be so kind as to go to iTunes and leave us a review, honest and a good review. Well, a good review is nice, but if, you know, I could not help but laugh at the fact that we got one that was a 1-star rating for not covering artists that have been on our list since day one. But the fact that we are only 20-something episodes in, we have not yet gotten there. So thanks right. for the 1-star review of artists we fully intended to cover.
It's cool.
Just be like, you haven't covered them? You're never going to cover them. I'm only going to listen to the show. It's like,
we are, though.
Wow.
Wow.
You went out of your way to do this for that? Because we're going to cover those artists. But anyway, that's our show. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate all the listeners as well. We'll be back next week with Chemical Brothers. And that's our show. Have a good one, everyone.
Later.